The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week, and we're very proud to have him, is Nick Langworthy, the new chairman of the New York State Republican Party. Chairman Langworthy was unanimously elected as chairman of the New York State Republican Committee on July 1st, 2019, making him the youngest person to lead the party in history. 38 years old. I think 38 is very young. You feel young, Nick?
So far, I feel young. We'll see where I am in about 6 months. How's that?
That's right. It'll add lots of white to your head. So there's no secret. Our old friend, the chairman, Mr. Cox, the chairman of the Republican Party, gave way to you. And you see your role a little bit differently than his, I think. How so?
Well, I think we just have far different styles. I mean, I've served 8-9 years as chairman of the Erie County Republican Party, and you know, I'm one that feels that the role of the party chairman is basically to become the head coach and general manager of the team. You know, my job is to recruit the candidates, to develop a game plan, and then to go execute that plan to win. So, you know, where I think Ed certainly was more ambassadorial. Not that I don't see the responsibility to that as well. But I think I'll probably be a little more aggressive in my messaging. And, I intend and have been since I announced my candidacy, traveling the state very, very extensively.
And, of course, he had royal blood. I mean, his father-in-law was president of the United States at one point. Your father-in-law is also?
My father-in-law was not. My father-in-law is a paralegal. So I don't come from that world. I grew up around Jamestown, New York, in the Southern Tier, and went to Niagara University, and was hired after my time there by a man named Tom Reynolds, who you may be familiar with, a former Assembly Minority Leader. And when I went to work for him, he was the chairman of the NRCC, and I worked for him in his government capacity, government office, for about 6 years, and culminated with running his final campaign in 2006, which was a race that I call my master's degree. So, as a congressional aide, did that, and I managed the race of his successor, and then I actually quit my job to run for chairman of the party in Erie County.
What does a chairman do anyway? I think most of our listeners don't really know. When you say, the cheerleader in chief, you have to recruit candidates. Right now, the Republican Party in New York, I think it's fair to say, is not doing too good. And I'm wondering how you can turn that around.
No, I should have looked over both shoulders and figured out there wasn't a line for the job. So some people think I'm nuts for wanting to take on this mission. I mean, we're not exactly the New England Patriots of political organizations right now. We're flat on our back, and I'm hoping this is what rock bottom looks like. And it's our job every single day to get up and build an organization that can compete and win for taxpayers in the state. If we have a very diverse state, we have a wonderful state, but it's taxed too much, it's regulated too much, and we have people in power, I don't believe, that respect taxpayers, and that includes the governor. So I have laid out a mission statement to my organization upon my election, that every day when I get up and go to work, I will build this party step by step so that we can be prepared to win and elect the next Republican governor and defeat Andrew Cuomo in 2022.
Chairman Nick Langworthy, I guess the question I have for you is, who's on your bench? Right now, making some news on these very airways with me, he announced he was going to run for a fourth term, something denied to his father. And I'm wondering, can you beat somebody with no one?
Well, we are building that bench, and we are going to recruit the next generation of elected officials here in New York State. I mean, you know, my election certainly represents generational change for the Republican Party, being basically half the age of my predecessor. But I believe we also have to do the same across the state. We need to recruit younger people to run for public office. We need to recruit, you know, youth and certainly invigorate more women to run for public office. I fully subscribe and will be partnering with Elise Stefanik, Congresswoman, you know, from the North Country, to find a way to harness what she's doing at the national level with EPAC in a mission where she's identified over 170 women to run for Congress across the nation. We're going to find a way to partner in that effort to take that right down to the municipal level and recruit and empower women to run for office, because I believe that the Republican Party is the best hope for taxpayers in this state, so that we won't be taxed into oblivion and lose another million of our residents as we have under Andrew Cuomo's watch. I think that number's up to around 1.2 million. But I do understand that this is Governor Cuomo's favorite radio program. So, hopefully he and his friends are listening here today, because we're going to take the fight to him every single day.
Well, I want to talk to T-Word, but before I talk to T-Word, I want to talk to the S-Word, and that's the New York State Senate. You lost the Senate. Now that, I mean, the party did. You didn't. But the party did. That was huge. And we do know that both parties are experts in gerrymandering their districts, but with the Republicans in the Senate with so many fewer people, that really left you out in the cold. Do you have any hope that you can take back the New York State Senate in the next election? Because if you wait one more after that, the Democrats will be gerrymandering like crazy.
Well, I look at it this way. We have we lost it in one election. I don't see why we, should be defeatist and say we can't win it back in one election. We have, a lot of us complained about the Senate Republican majority, me included, that they didn't drive the policy narrative, that they didn't get enough accomplished. But I think now we all know that we didn't know how good we had it. We had an important, they were not, with a Democrat governor and an overwhelmingly Democratic assembly, they were not able to stop or drive the total narrative, but they were able to actually stop really bad things from happening to taxpayers. And now that's gone. I mean, look at this farm labor bill that just was signed into law. I mean, this is going to crush family farms around the state. I mean, if you talk to anybody in agriculture. But they were that important stop sign or speed bump, whatever, analogy you want to use. We have to go and gain ground back there. I mean, there's now an element of nonpartisan redistricting that, or independent redistricting, that should be, a part of this state constitution. I'm certainly no expert in that yet, but I do know that we have to gain seats in the next election to trigger that. And I'll be working with the Senate leadership to do whatever I can as state chairman to recruit candidates and help them raise the funds necessary to go get some of those seats back that we lost and really should not have.
Well, a lot of the people who are out now were the old timers, and people knew their names and they voted for them out of respect and all the rest. Those guys are gone right now, so you're going to have to get some new faces.
And that's what we have to do. If you just rely on the same elected officials that have been around for 30 years to run your party, I mean, it's going to have an expiration date. It's, we have, values that are based on, greater personal responsibility and having a state that, where people can afford to live. I mean, I'm a proud, unabashed upstater. The lifestyle that me and my family enjoy and the experience I had growing up, I mean, it's one I want for my kids and my grandkids. I don't want them to have to leave the state. But unfortunately, the sad upstate narrative is we have, our communities have been hollowed out. They've been hollowed out because there's not the jobs, there's not the opportunity, there's not the economic freedom that you have in other parts of the country. And, we spend a fortune to have world-class education systems, both, elementary and high school, and then a world-class SUNY system that is cranking out the best and brightest, and that's our greatest export. And that has got to stop. And, these wrong-headed policies led by, Andrew Cuomo and the socialist Democrats that he empowered to win the Senate, they're driving people away. They're not enticing businesses here.
I noticed, Nick Langworthy, that you used the word socialist Democrats. That's something that Donald Trump says also. He's trying to affix that name onto the Democratic Party, you know, with AOC and three of her colleagues, the so-called squad. Are you going to pick up that cry?
I absolutely think the president shouldn't give an inch on this fight with the squad. I mean, they are the new face of the Democrat Party. It's not any of the people running for the presidency. It's AOC and the squad. And Nancy Pelosi can't control the narrative anymore. I mean, she's now having to manage the, a very aggressive, young members of Congress that have come in that bring socialist tendencies. I mean, you have, I believe, Ilhan Omar suggesting that we have, either her or Rashida Tlaib, saying $20 minimum wage nationally. I mean, if one of these people took one class in economics, they may understand a little bit about, what this would do to jobs and inflation around the country and hurting the actual people you're trying to help. But that is the new face. That is the driving effort of the modern Democrat Party. And Andrew Cuomo's got a small version of that here in New York with the people that took out the IDC members in the primaries. I mean, they are much more socialist than they are, traditional mainline Democrats. They're driving the train here in Albany. And we had a disastrous session. The capstone was the driver's licenses for illegal immigrants. I mean, this is something that, people of all party affiliations, reject, but it was still slammed through because it fits the narrative of what this new extreme left-wing Democrat Party has become.
What's happening in upstate? You mentioned that you came from Jamestown, and of course we used to interview, when Mario didn't show up for this very show, Stan Lundin. He came from Jamestown, didn't he? A Democrat.
He sure did.
And is upstate New York up for grabs, or is it going to be traditionally Republican?
I think that there's places that, you have very independent-minded voters. But right now they don't see a government at the state level that has their interests at heart. I mean, we have a governor that's, put these gimmicky games, these schemes like Buffalo Billion or the Hunger Games style, competitions for economic development money. These are all boondoggles. They've all failed. I mean, we have one of the worst business climates in the United States of America. I mean, you want to attract jobs, you cut taxes, you get the regulations out of the way, and you let businesses come here. I mean, Jeff Bezos came out this week in that blockbuster CNBC article in piece on why they scrapped New York. It wasn't the socialist politicians. It was the business climate at the end of the day. They didn't want to fight with the socialist politicians, but really, they got themselves into a bad deal, and they found a way out of that deal because they just didn't want to deal with New York in just all of the nonsense that goes on with trying to do business here. So we lost 25,000 jobs. It would be transformational to the economy. It would have put a huge boost to the bottom line of our state coffers and certainly, help local property values and local tax revenue. But that was chased away because it just doesn't make sense for businesses to come here.
I wanted to ask you, mentioned upstate and to the way in which I think you were referring to the way contracts have been given out. We see at least two of the Cuomo chief aides, and I knew them fairly well, who were in jail or on the way to jail. And so do you think that he got away with that, he should have been?
He absolutely
referenced?
Got away with that. I mean, luckily he's got very loyal people that went to jail and didn't drag him into it. I mean, I certainly have no proof and I'm not offering any, but, someone that you say is like a brother to you in your father's eulogy, they're not pulling the wool over your eyes. I mean, this is someone that was obviously, you talk to anybody involved, his closest intimate, he was not doing these things without the governor's knowledge. I mean, anyone of common sense could tell you that. I mean, this governor has been auditioning for this job his whole life. He's very careful. He doesn't keep paper trails. But he operates in secret. He operates very deceptively. And, he was able to elude all of that. So, but here his right-hand man's in jail, and somehow the Teflon, made sure that none of this stuck to him.
Do you think he's a left-winger? He's been claiming, huge article in the New York Times recently, he talks about it with me an awful lot, and says he is the left. Do you think he is?
I think he would, if it was favorable for him to say he was the right, he would say that. I think he's a dictator, and I think he would say whatever it took, whatever was in favor at that time to make him more powerful, he would say that. I mean, he was a centrist, remember, when he first got elected? I mean, when he was buddy-buddy with Senate Republicans and did all sorts of business with Senate Republicans, and then when the national winds changed, he became this proud progressive. I think it's poppycock. I think the governor is someone that is driven by his passion for power. The one thing he lacks is guts, and he hasn't jumped into this presidential election, and he claims he wants to be with Biden. Well, Biden's looking like the Titanic every single day here. So, you know, when the Titanic finally sinks, will the governor have the, you know, the intestinal fortitude and the guts to actually get in the race himself? That I don't think he does.
Let's talk a little bit. We talked about the other word. Let's talk about the T word, Trump. In your competition for the chairmanship of the party, you were described as much more of a pro-Trumper than your predecessor. Is that a fair way to see it?
I have had a longstanding relationship with the president that dates back to when we tried to recruit him to run for governor in 2014. I spent a great deal of time with him and was involved with President Trump when he was trying to purchase the Buffalo Bills. And so I am certainly no stranger to him or, you know, the Trump organization in that regard. So I was, you know, unapologetic supporter of his in 2016, and I remain so today.
He's pretty unpopular, especially in New York City. Does that give you any bother?
I mean, listen, any president that's a Republican is going to have unfavorable numbers in New York State. I mean, we're down 3 million votes in enrollment. So, you know, one, that's a challenge to the party to try to get more Republicans registered to vote. We're a liberal state. That's not lost on me. So the policies that the president, you know, advocates for are not going to be overly favorable here. George W. Bush's numbers in New York were pretty terrible. And, you know, New York will not be a swing state. It's, you know, if President Trump were to get to the point where New York was in play, I mean, he'd be well on his way to a 49 state sweep like Reagan in 84. So, you know, but at the same time, you know, he has areas of the state where he performs very well. I mean, there's members of the Senate, members of the Congress that would not have won in 2016 if had it not been for him at the top of the ticket. So I do think that, you know, he's going to have a very important role getting, you know, our core supporters that, you know, maybe didn't come out in 2018, getting them back out in 2020. So I believe all politics is local. There's areas where, you know, he's not so popular. There's areas where he's very popular. And I think every campaign's got to be run a little differently.
Let's talk about Senator Gillibrand. We do know that she got appointed.
There's not much to talk about here.
Actually, I'm still perplexed. I don't understand why and how she's running for president, but I'm wondering what your critique is.
I think this is just one of the biggest jokes that we've ever seen. I mean, she's absolutely an embarrassment of a U.S. senator. She's become a punchline to the presidential election, you know, spending money to buy single-dollar donors so that she can make the debate stage. She's done absolutely nothing to differentiate herself for the rest of the candidacy. You know, there's some very good candidates in the race. She is not one of them. And, you know, I think she has, I mean, you know, say what you want about Senator Schumer's politics, which I don't agree with any of. I can't dispute the fact that he puts the work in. I mean, he visits all 62 counties every single year. I mean, I run into him in Buffalo. But Senator Gillibrand is an absentee senator and always has been. She has flip-flopped on virtually every issue. I mean, she was Annie Oakley when she ran for the Congress, and now she's a gun grabber.
Meaning pro-gun is what you're
saying. She was an NRA-endorsed, you know, candidate, kind of like the lieutenant governor, Kathy Hochul. She's done the same thing. She was a big proponent of the NRA, and then when it wasn't favorable to do so anymore, she's completely changed her tune. So I believe.
But she won over. You know, but she won. But Nick, she won overwhelmingly.
And our party has to do a better job, you know, laying the case out. I mean, we have to be much more aggressive year round, not just at election time. You can't let, you know, these people get away with hypocrisy every single day, not challenge them on it, and then expect that you're going to have a shot in the election. I mean, we have to recruit our candidates earlier. We have to identify them earlier. I mean, unfortunately, Kirsten Gillibrand's good until, I believe, 2024 now. So
that may be the year that Andrew Cuomo is running for president. 2024. So,
well, he'll be unemployed by then, so he might have time for that.
So I see that your predecessor left you with very little money, Mr. Cox, left you with very little money in your bank account for the party. Was that done on purpose, or did you think there wasn't that much money to begin with?
I'm not going to speculate. I mean, he made spending decisions that he saw fit. I mean, he was very generous with his own resources with the party. I mean, he put a lot of his own personal assets into the party. Those were his decisions to make up until July 1st when I took over, and what's left in the account is left in the account. I mean, the party is debt-free. I appreciate that. We will move on. I did not believe that I was going to be left with a Brinks truck full of money, but, you know, everything else, it is what it is, and I look forward, not backwards.
Are you keeping touch with Ed Cox, or is that pretty well over now?
No, we've been in regular communication. I mean, I think I last talked to him the day I left for Israel, which was like a week ago. So no, we've been in regular touch, and he's a gentleman, and I assume we'll be working together quite a bit.
Okay. Have you been listening to the Mueller testimony?
I haven't had a lot of time to watch this morning because I've had a lot of appointments. But my understanding is it's a complete dud.
Well, Mueller makes it clear that he did not exonerate the president, which the president has been claiming, and that seems to be the big headline. Now, of course, a lot depends on whether you're watching it on CNN or Fox.
Nearly every question answered, he said, I refer to my report, which it proves that the Democrats are just looking to keep this in the spotlight. Mueller was flustered from the piece I saw. He didn't have a good answer on why he couldn't say that Trump is innocent because he was not proven guilty. I mean, that right is afforded to every single American. This is grandstanding. This is a waste of taxpayer resources. This is a continuation from people that are obsessed with impeaching the president. The American public doesn't stand for impeaching the president. That's evident in public polling. You know, we're going to have an election next year. If they don't want him to be president anymore, they're going to go out and vote for a different candidate. To just harass the president time and time again, there clearly was not evidence to move ahead. Mueller's wrote a whole report. He spent endless amounts of money. They interviewed so many people. They ruined a lot of people's lives in the process. And we come back with nothing. There's nothing there. And these Democrats that are running these congressional committees are absolutely wasting the taxpayers' time and the interest instead of solving some things for the American people.
Chairman Langworthy, I want to go back to your bench. Who you got? I mean, in the end, right now, there are a lot of, rising Democrats who people's name people recognize. But who do you have who you could say, okay, if we have to oppose Gillibrand, if we have to oppose the governor, we have these people who are recognizable Republicans. We don't have a Nelson Rockefeller right now, but who you got?
Well, you see, the kind of the unfair thing, and I remember my old friend Fred Dicker when he'd beat us up when we'd go on the air saying, you have no one, no one's ever heard of this person. Who has statewide name identification, in New York, unless you've run for statewide office? Very few. The mayor of New York has decent statewide name recognition. Even if you looked at probably the recognition of a three-term state controller, it would be, pretty pathetic. You have to go cultivate this. We don't have a statewide election again until 2022. So, we have some very good regional officials. I mean, I look at, Marcus Molinaro. I think he ran a great campaign. It was just the party prepared to meet the moment. By a $40 million freight train. And we didn't nominate Marcus Molinaro until April. He wasn't resolved as a candidate until April, and the party has done this time and again. We pick a candidate in April, and we're shocked that they don't have $10 million to go fight the fight by July. It's an impossibility. I will lay out the groundwork to make sure our candidate selection is starting at least a year in advance, and that recruitment for statewide offices has started now. You know, we are talking to people all over the state, and everything's on the table. You know, whether it's, you know, someone that has a great deal of accomplishment in government, like a Molinaro or a Rob Astorino, or someone that maybe has a lot of, you know, experience in the private sector and is a turnaround artist, somebody like a Harry Wilson. I mean, those are, you know, those skill sets are there. First and foremost, we need someone that can be the governor, that can do a great job for the taxpayers, because this all comes back to taxpayers. They're not being respected by their state government. We need someone that will once again put the people, the hardworking women and men across the state that are actually paying the bills in this high tax state at the forefront, not the criminals like Andrew Cuomo has. I mean, in criminals, in his Democrat Party, criminals come first, taxpayers come last. But we have to find someone that can be an effective governor, and then secondly, can win the election. I mean, I'm obviously a conservative Republican, but I know that, you know, maybe my brand of conservatism doesn't play in every single media market. We need someone that can succeed in the New York City suburbs, you know, whether it be Long Island or north of the city, and can certainly, you know, ramp up the amount of votes that our party gets within the five boroughs. And I think there's a lot of opportunities for us. But I leave you with, everything is on the table. I mean, this our next candidate could be someone we've never met or heard of. But, you know, we are going to scour this state for the best and the brightest to put forward for public office, whether it be for Congress, for state Senate, for statewide offices down the road.
And if you can't make it, I mean, you got a rough road, let's all admit it. And I'm sure you will, too. If you can't make it, do you have to get out?
I'm just getting started, Alan. So I know that, you know, this isn't something I'm going to do for the rest of my life, but I'm going to go in there every single day and fight like hell to elect more Republicans to public office and people that respect taxpayers again in this state. That has not happened in this state in a long time. And you watch the output of what's going on under one party, Democrat socialist regime under Andrew Cuomo's watch. It is not helping the future of our state. It's going to cripple us. It's going to send more people to vote with their feet. I mean, look no further than the fact that the estimates right now have us losing two seats in the Congress.
Right.
That is, I mean, it's damning. And if you look at the two states that are due to lose two seats, it's New York and it's California. Two states that tax too much and have taken freedom away from their residents.
It's terrific to have Nick Langworthy, the new, young, aggressive chairman of the Republican Party, with us on the Capitol Connection. We really appreciate, Nick, your being here, and we hope you'll come back a lot.
I'll be back, Alan.